Omaha Public Radio, KIOS-FM, presents another program from the Greater Omaha Chamber of Commerce. We'll hear the keynote address given at the Chamber of Commerce's 2008 annual meeting. This program was recorded by KIOS-FM on Tuesday, February 12, 2008, for broadcast at this time. The guest speaker will be Stephen M. R. Covey, the author of the best-selling book, The Speed of Trust. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of Omaha Public Radio, the Greater Omaha Chamber of Commerce, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is David G. Brown, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Greater Omaha Chamber of Commerce.
Stephen is co-founder and CEO of CoveyLink Worldwide and the author of The Speed of Trust. CoveyLink Worldwide is a boutique consultancy firm that focuses on enabling leaders and organizations to build high-trust, high-performance cultures as a way to enhance their brand, business, and influence through leveraging their intellectual property. The son of Dr. Stephen R. Covey, he is the former CEO of Covey Leadership Center. He personally led the strategy that propelled his father's book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, to one of the two most influential business books of the 20th century, according to CEO Magazine. Ladies and gentlemen, join me in giving an Omaha welcome to our speaker, Stephen M. R. Covey.
Well, thank you, David, for that very kind introduction. As the expression goes, my father would have enjoyed that, and my mother would have believed it. I'm thrilled to be with you today, Mr. Governor, Mr. Mayor, to David and to all the directors on the board of the chamber, to the sponsors of the board, to today's honorees, to all of you being here. It's truly an honor for me to have this opportunity to be in this great city, this greater metropolitan area, and to be present with you and what you represent and who you are. In fact, I'm just overwhelmed at this beautiful facility, this conference center, and really what is happening here in this fantastic city. It's very exciting. I understand that the hotel here, the Omaha Hilton, is actually owned by the city, and it's a great hotel. You can always tell the quality of a hotel by the thickness of its towels. And the towels here at the Omaha Hilton were so thick that I could only fit one of them into my bag when I packed this morning. Well, I'm just kidding on that. But I'm not kidding about this message that I have for us today. And I actually think that I can use an Omahan to illustrate this. The whole idea of what I call the speed of trust. So let me begin, if I could, and I'll begin by sharing a story, and this is from one of your own, Warren Buffett. And I know that you take great pride in Warren, and he in Omaha, and he, in many ways, is not only an icon to the business community of a different way of doing business, a better way of doing business, but he's also really a symbol of the way things are done here in Omaha, in Nebraska, and how there's business that can be done with integrity and with trust. In addition to having the extraordinary business track record and the results, the returns that we see from Warren Buffett and from Berkshire Hathaway, I think what is equally remarkable is to see the manner in which it is done. So let me begin with this story. And it's really a trust story. In a merger that took place a couple of years ago with Warren Buffett acquiring a company from Walmart, McLane Distribution, Warren wrote about this in his annual report. And this was a pretty remarkable endeavor and also not untypical for how things are done at Berkshire Hathaway. But here's what Warren wrote in his annual report. He said this, and by the way, McLane is not a small company. This is a $23 billion enterprise based in Temple, Texas, in food distribution services and the like. Buffett wrote in his annual report as follows: "To make the McLane deal, We had one single meeting of about 2 hours. We then shook hands. 29 days later, Walmart had their money. We did no due diligence. We knew everything would be exactly the way Walmart said it would be, and it was. So here's a big deal happening in 29 days with no due diligence. I used to work for a short period of time in investment banking on Wall Street, and I can say this, that deals of this size typically would take you 6 months to close, maybe even a year to close, and you'd spend millions of dollars in due diligence with accountants, attorneys, and auditors verifying and validating the data, all of which is considered good practice, and it is. But in this case, because there was high trust, high credibility, and with that high trust being established, Warren Buffett is able to close a deal in 29 days instead of spending a year, and with no due diligence cost instead of spending tens of millions of dollars in due diligence. Now that is the speed of trust. You can't do that kind of deal without trust. It'd be foolish to try. With trust, it becomes a possibility, an option. Let me tell you part two of this story. I shared this one time with a group of leaders, and afterwards, the CEO of a company came up to me and said, "So Warren Buffett acquired McLane in 29 days, huh?" "Mm-hmm. Can I tell you my story?" I said, "Please, I'd love to hear it." "Well, our company was also acquired by Berkshire Hathaway, but our deal was done in 28 days. He was very quick to point out it was one day faster. I said, "Really, tell me about it." And he said, "Well, as we went through the process, Warren Buffett was very straightforward. He liked our business, but it was very important to him that he could, that we could trust each other and that the financials were accurate. And, you know, he asked, are these financials accurate? Can I rely upon them? Can I trust them? Can I trust you? Because with that, with the trust, everything can happen. Without it, it can't." Well, the deal happened. 28 days, no due diligence. Let me tell you part three of this local story. Berkshire Hathaway it not only makes investments in companies, it also acquires companies and runs them. So in many respects, it is a conglomerate. And it has a central headquarters staff that's based here in Omaha. And there's a total of at least 42 acquired companies. I think it's actually higher now. And over 192,000 employees are part of these 42 different enterprises. You know, companies like McLane and Geico and Fruit of the Loom and others. Well, the corporate headquarters staff is here with finance and accounting and HR legal operations, etc. A typical conglomerate with that many companies, that many employees, would probably have at least 1,000 people, if not 2,000 or 3,000 people, at headquarters. Well, here in Omaha at Berkshire Hathaway headquarters, there is a total of 17 people. 17 people that oversee these 192,000 people. Why? Charlie Munger, the number two person there at Berkshire Hathaway, said, "It's because we operate on the premise of deserved trust. We assume that people deserve trust until proven otherwise." But that's their starting place, the premise of deserved trust. "And we get rid of the craziness," he said, "of people, checking people, to make sure everything is done well and right." And they have a high expectation around this trust and the stewardship that's given in that trust, and that people will respond to it, rise to the occasion, and behave accordingly. And you know what? They do. And it happens. And here is an extraordinary company that's based here with 17 people at corporate headquarters running 42-plus enterprises, 192,000 people. You can't do that without trust. But with trust, you can. Look at the enormous efficiencies that trust gives you. Look at the speed at which things can get done and the low cost. See, nothing is as fast as the speed of trust. And there's not a better example of it than what we see here in Omaha with Warren Buffett and Berkshire Hathaway. I think I could probably also go through many, many other companies and stories of leaders and companies that are based here, that do business here, that operate with a similar way of doing business. It's built on integrity, on credibility, and on establishing trust and relationships of trust that enable you to move with incredible speed and with low cost. So I want to take this topic of trust and reframe it consistent with this story I told you. I like to tell this story, especially in this audience, because of Warren being from here in Omaha, Berkshire Hathaway, but also because of his brand, his reputation. It's so strong in the marketplace. And he's known for business results and acumen. And yet to see that part of this philosophy is all about this so-called soft intangible of trust, and how, in fact, it's not a soft intangible. It's a hard-edged economic driver. That is why that story is so inspiring to me, because it reframes trust. And that's what we have to do. We have to think about this differently. Trust is so underestimated. It's neglected. It's assumed. It's taken for granted. We assume we understand it. It's like the expression, fish discover water last. See, the fish are so immersed in the presence of water that they're almost unaware of its existence. So it is with people and trust. People discover trust last. We're so immersed in it for the very essence of commerce and of society working that we take it for granted until the trust gets too low or becomes polluted. And then we become aware of it, sometimes painfully aware, and perhaps sometimes too late. So rather than learn it that way, let's focus on it explicitly, deliberately, like Berkshire Hathaway and many, many other outstanding companies and leaders do. There's a couple of myths I'd like to kind of take on about trust. And this illustration debunks them. One is this, that trust is soft. It's a soft, nice-to-have social virtue. I'm making the case that trust is a hard-edged economic driver. Why? Because it always affects speed and cost, and you can measure speed and cost. Here's another myth. Trust is slow, that it takes forever. Now, I'll acknowledge that restoring trust takes time, and it can take time to establish trust. I recognize that. However, my friends, once you understand the dimensions of trust, the components that are behind it, and the behaviors that actually build it, you can build trust far faster than you might think possible. And once you have established trust, nothing is as fast as the speed of trust. Once you have established it, nothing is as fast as the speed of trust. Now, think through your own life, at work, at home, in the community, and think through relationships that you have. In fact, in your mind right now, identify a person with whom you have a high trust relationship. Someone that you work with or interact with routinely, regularly. Could be a boss, a peer, a report, a customer, a family member, partner, supplier, etc. Now, with that person in mind, just answer again in your own mind, what's it like to work with that person? What's it like to communicate with them? How fast can you do things? And what kind of results are you able to achieve? Now, let's contrast this, if you would. I'd like you to now identify a second person that you work with, but with whom you have a low trust relationship for whatever reason. Again, it could be a boss, a peer, a report, a supplier, partner, or a family member. Now, with this person in mind, let's ask the same questions. What's it like to work with this person with whom there's low trust? What's it like to communicate with them? How fast can things get done? And what kind of results are you able to achieve together? We all know this intuitively. We all know it from our own experience. We've all been on both sides of the equation of high-trust relationships, low-trust relationships, and the difference is palpable. And we intuitively understand it. What I hope today is to just give you some of the language and the framework to describe what you already know. Everything is affected by trust. In these relationships, the difference is not small, it's huge, isn't it? And everything is affected by it. Just take communication as one example. What's it like to communicate in a low-trust relationship, or actually in a high-trust relationship? In a high-trust relationship, the communication, it happens fast. It's real, it's open, it's enjoyable, it's pleasant, spontaneous, it's rich, it's meaningful. My experience is in high-trust relationships, you can almost sometimes say the wrong thing and people still get your meaning because trust fills in the gap. But let's contrast that to low-trust relationships. Communication in low-trust relationships can be described as guarded, calculated, withholding, painful, you know, unpleasant, slow, not real, not open, these types of things. My experience is all of that, but also this, that in a low-trust relationship, you could be very precise and even measured in your communication, and people will still misinterpret you. Read things into it, project their own agenda. See, communication is far more a matter of trust than it is technique. Although technique matters, trust matters infinitely more. And so it is with every dimension in our lives, in our relationships, with our businesses, in the community. Trust changes everything. If there's trust, it's like a performance multiplier, makes everything better. If there's low trust, it makes everything worse. It diminishes it. It dilutes it. It taxes it. It's economic. I believe, my friends, that there are two big ideas that I really hope to convey in this presentation. Let me mention them quickly, and then I'll go through each one. The first is that there is a compelling business case for trust. Not just a social case, but a business case for trust. And the second is that trust is something that we can get good at. We can actually turn the creation of trust into a skill, into a competency. So let me hit these first two. Let me hit both of these points. On the first one, there's a business case for trust. Warren Buffett's a good example of that. Look at how with high trust, you move with high speed, low cost. If trust were just a social virtue and had no other economic value, when the trust is low, we might say, hey, you know, that's just the way it is. Nothing we can do about it. It's too bad. But because it's an economic driver, it affects then the performance of the enterprise, of the business, of the organization. And it's not acceptable to labor in low-trust environments. We've got to focus on it. Let me share a very simple formula that helps us quantify the economics of trust. Trust always affects two measurable outcomes, always, speed and cost. And when trust goes down in any relationship, on a team, in a company, with a customer, in a community, when trust goes down, speed goes down with it, everything takes longer, cost goes up, everything costs more. This is a tax, a low trust tax. Now, the converse is true as well. When trust goes up in a relationship, on a team, in a company, with a customer, in a community, when trust goes up, speed goes up with it. Everything happens faster. Cost comes down. Everything costs less. That is a dividend, a high trust dividend. It is that real, that simple, that predictable. Let me illustrate. After the 9/11 terrorist attacks, our trust or confidence in flying in this country and elsewhere went down, naturally. So we took steps to compensate for it. We propped it up with more security. That helped, but it came at a price. Takes longer, costs more. I used to be able to arrive at my home airport literally about a half hour before my flight, just cruise through security. Today, I have to arrive about an hour and a half before my flight, because I never know how long it will take me. I'm grateful for the security, but it comes at a price. Trust goes down. We take steps to compensate for the lack of it, which take time, cost money. I recently flew into and out of a high-risk airport in the Middle East, where the trust in that particular region was very low for geopolitical reasons. When I left that country, I had to arrive at the airport 4 hours before my flight. My bag was then unpacked and repacked a couple of times, and I was interrogated a couple of times, and I was treated like everybody else. But the trust was so low, they had to take great steps to compensate for that lack of trust, for which I was very grateful, but again, it came at a price. Took longer, cost more. After we had the scandals of Enron and WorldCom and other large companies violating public trust, our trust in the public markets went down. Can't have that happen. So U.S. Congress steps in, passes Sarbanes-Oxley. Sarbanes-Oxley is not trust itself. It's a series of rules and regulations and compliance issues designed because of the lack of trust. So it's a prosthesis, but it's a slow-moving and a costly prosthesis at that. Ask anyone dealing with Sarbanes-Oxley issues. It takes a lot of time. It costs a lot of money. But that's the consequence of low trust. But let's look at the opposite of this. When trust goes up, speed goes up while cost comes down. So Warren Buffett goes in with his counterparts at Walmart, increases trust fast, extends it, trust goes up, speed goes up, they do the deal in less than a month instead of 6 months to a year. Cost goes down, no due diligence. Now that's, you know, Warren Buffett doing big deals. How about something that we can all relate to, no matter what size of business we do? Think of I call it the donut guy. He's literally a street vendor who sells donuts and coffee on a cart outside a major office building in a huge city here in the U.S. He's got a great location right outside this office building. He notices these long lines will gather to be served by him. He also notices that sometimes people grow impatient from waiting in line and just go into the building without being served. What's taking him the longest is making change for his customer. So this street vendor simply decides that he's going to trust his customer. And what he does is he gets a basket, and in that basket he puts dollar bills, $5 bills, nickels, quarters, and dimes. He puts the basket on the end of his cart. The customer comes through. He serves them donuts and coffee. The customer goes to pay him, and he motions to the customer, "You make your own change." So the customer goes down to the end of the cart, and on their own, they make their own change into the basket. Now, there's some risk in this, right? Because maybe the customer makes the wrong change accidentally, or worse, maybe they make the wrong change purposefully. But when trust goes up, what goes up with it? Speed. And that's exactly what happened. Instantly, he was able to put through twice as many customers as before. See, he never lacked for customers. They would leave and grow impatient. Suddenly, twice as many customers going through before. He has no new cost in doing it. He's still a one-person show. And what he found was rather than people abusing the trust, he found the opposite. People liked being trusted. They came back to him more frequently, they were more loyal, and they gave him larger than normal tips. He more than doubled his business by simply extending trust to his customer. It's just a simple illustration of the economics in trust. And these economics are in action everywhere, in your organizations, in your communities, in your homes. They're taking place everywhere, and it's quantifiable. Nothing is as fast as the speed of trust. Now, that's part of this business case for trust. It's real. The data on this is overwhelming. In fact, the Watson-Wyatt data shows this, that high-trust organizations outperform low-trust organizations by 286% in total return to shareholders. There's another study that shows a similar thing that shows it actually at 4 times. You see it in schools as well. High-trust schools have a 3.5 times greater probability of increasing test scores than do low-trust schools. So the multiplier on high-trust is literally like 3 to 4 times of everything. It's a performance multiplier. When the trust is low, it is a destructive tax. There's the business case for trust. It always affects speed and cost. So let's go to the second big idea, that we can do something about this. We don't have to accept if it's low that we're stuck with it. We can actually grow it. We can increase it. We can improve it. We can move the needle on trust. Trust is a function of really 2 things. It's a function, first, of our credibility, and second, of our behavior. Now, I'm going to briefly introduce a model here on credibility, because this is where the trust begins. Credibility is the foundation on which all trust is built and sustained. And we'll never have more trust with other people than we do credibility in the long run. So we always start with ourselves, our own credibility, or our company and its credibility in the marketplace. Then we move to behavior. Let's take a look. I call this the 4 cores of credibility. And I use the metaphor of a tree with character and competence. 2 of these cores of credibility belong to character. 2 of them belong to competence. All 4 are vital to increase our credibility with people. Let's look at the first core of credibility. This is like the root system of the tree, integrity. It's the foundation, the roots. Most of it's beneath the surface. You don't know how strong those roots are until the storm comes. When the storm comes, does the tree hold or not? That's the real test of integrity, is when there's a storm or when it costs you. It's easy to have integrity when there's no cost, but when there's a cost to it, that's the test. Andy Roddick, the American tennis player, was playing in the Italian Masters a few years ago. It was match point in favor of Roddick. So 1 more point and he wins the match. His opponent serves the ball. The ball is called out. So Roddick has won. They move forward to shake hands. As they do that, Roddick notices that the ball has landed on, not beyond the line. It's in, not out. Now, this is a sport in which the umpires make the calls, or technology does. So Roddick could just keep walking forward, shake hands. The match is over. He's won. Instead, he points out to the umpire, the ball's in. They continue the match. Well, Roddick goes on and loses the match. But while he lost the match, he won something far greater. He won integrity and credibility, believability. So you can see how the display of integrity builds credibility, believability, that then gets carried to other parts of life. That's the foundation. Let's look at the second core. This is true for a person. It's true for a company. The second core is like the trunk of the tree. It refers to our intent, our motive. The intent that builds trust and confidence is when people believe that we care for them, that we're seeking their benefit and not just our own. Mutual benefit, win-win. And when we do that, when others sense that we are after their best interest, they tend to trust us. If they don't sense that, if they're questioning that, wondering that, they'll tend not to trust us, be it a customer or an employee. So your intent matters, your motive. You can see how these first two cores, integrity and intent, they flow out of your character. That's the starting place for this credibility. But more than just that, we now have to move into the competence dimension of credibility, because it's not enough that I'm honest and have good intent. I also have to be able to perform and have those capabilities. So the third core of credibility is your capabilities. Your capabilities are referring to your talents, your skills, your expertise, your knowledge that you have to apply to the problems and the opportunities. Are you current? Are you relevant? If you are, you'll tend to be trusted. If you're not, if you become irrelevant or obsolete, you'll tend not to be trusted. So always staying current and relevant here is so vital. Think Tiger Woods winning and then changing his swing. You know, he wins the majors 10 years ago and then changes his swing. And then he wins 4 major tournaments in a row and changes his swing yet again. Why? Because he wants to get better, stay current, stay relevant. I talked to somebody who said, I've got 15 years of experience. And I said, that's fantastic. My only question is this: do you have 15 years of experience, or do you have 1 year of experience repeated 15 times? Big difference. I was with a CEO one time of a company who he was making a case to do a massive training initiative for all of his people on areas that he felt like they needed these skills and competencies. And a board member asked the question and said, well, what if we spend all of this time and money training everybody and then they all leave? And the CEO thought about it, and then he said, it's a good point, but let me ask you this. What if we don't train them and they all stay? His point was, we've got to stay current, relevant. We've got to keep our capabilities strong. That makes us credible. That builds trust. Finally, let's look at that's like the branches of the tree. So let's look at the fruits of the tree. The fruits of the tree are results. Results is our track record, our past performance, our current performance, because people are projecting upon us future performance based upon what they've seen. See, it's not enough just to have integrity. That is the foundation. Not enough to add intent. That's vital too. We also need to have capabilities and results. You trust people that are honest and can perform. Both are vital. When you have that combination of character and competence, you can build trust and build it fast. That's where Warren Buffett is. His credibility is so high, he's able to establish trust very fast with people because his reputation precedes him. So it is with many of you, hopefully all of us. We try to do that. So that's the first step. I said there was two things that build the trust. The first is credibility, and the second is behavior. Let me briefly mention this about behavior. That in the Speed of Trust book, we go in great depth about 13 behaviors that are common to high trust people, high trust leaders, high trust companies, the things they do and how they do them. It's behavior such as talking straight and demonstrating respect and creating transparency and righting wrongs and showing loyalty. Behavior such as delivering results and getting better, improving, and confronting reality and clarifying expectations and practicing accountability. And also behavior such as listening first, keeping commitments. And the last behavior is to extend trust. It's ironic that one of the best ways to build trust is to extend it, to give it. And yet it is. And the very act of giving trust to other people, people reciprocate. They respond back. Most people respond how they're treated. One reason why there's such low trust in many organizations today in terms of employees trusting management is because management doesn't trust employees, and people reciprocate how they're treated. when we extend trust, when we lead trust, which is the essence of leadership, to lead first, extending that trust, we create extraordinary results, and most people respond to it. Now, I know a few might abuse it, but don't let the few tell you about the many. Don't let the 10% you can't trust tell you about the 90% that you can. And too often we allow that to happen. Then let me conclude with this brief story that illustrates how you build trust, how you restore it, and because so often we need to restore trust. This happened a couple of years ago with my son when he turned 16 years old. And when you turn 16, you can drive. And he was excited to drive. My wife and I, his mother and I, my wife, were excited for him to drive too because we were tired of being a taxi service. Well, we told him, son, driving is a privilege, not a right. But we'd love you to drive, but you need to obey the rules. We clarified expectations. That's a behavior that builds trust. We went through the rules. Be safe. Go the speed limit. Wear your seatbelt. You know, obey the laws, etc. You got it, son? Yeah, got it, Dad. Got it, Mom. You're clear? Yes. Because if you disobey these rules, you'll lose the privilege to drive. Don't worry. Well, everything went great for the first month. Then about a month into it, on a Friday night at midnight, the telephone rings. And I hear my wife answer the phone and say these words. I'll let you talk to his father, officer. And she hands me the phone, and sure enough, it is the police. My son has been pulled over for speeding, excessive speeding, as in going 83 miles an hour in a 25-mile-an-hour zone. Now, there was no drugs or alcohol or anything like that involved. He's a good kid. He just had teenage judgment. He later said, well, Dad, I was trying to get home for curfew, and I had to hurry. Well, we played this thing out, went to court. He had to pay a fine, $555. We made him pay it. That was hard on him. He had a summer job. It took almost all of his savings. But then the judge did not suspend his license. But guess who did? That's right. We did. His parents. Why? Because we wanted him to trust us. And we felt like if we didn't suspend his license, he wouldn't trust us, and neither would his siblings. So we did that. It was hard on him. He was embarrassed. It was hard on us. We lost our driver. After about 3 months, we said, son, are you ready to drive again? I'm ready, Dad. Are you clear on the rules? Dad, I've never been more clear about anything in my life, he said. And I said, well, we're ready to have you drive again. We trust you to drive again. We re-extended the trust. Here's how this story ends so happily, is that he's been a model driver ever since. How do we know that? We observe it, but we also hear it from his friends and from his friends' parents. When he's going somewhere and his friends' parents ask, where are you going? They say, don't worry, Mom, don't worry, Dad. We're going with Covey. And that means we're going the speed limit, we're wearing seatbelts, it's no fun at all. But he has earned that type of reputation. See, he has behaved himself out of the problem he behaved himself into. You can't talk yourself out of a problem you behaved yourself into. The only way out is through your behavior. And so it is with trust. We earn it with our credibility and then with our behavior. But the great thing is, in most cases, we also can restore it and earn it back again if it's been lost. My friends, nothing is as fast as the speed of trust. Nothing is as profitable as the economics of trust. Nothing is as inspiring as an offering of trust. And nothing is as central to leadership as relationships of trust. It's truly the one thing that changes everything. In the words of Albert Schweitzer, he said, in everybody's life, at some time, our inner fire goes out. It is then burst into flame by an encounter with another human being. We should all be thankful for those people who rekindle the inner spirit. When we extend trust to another person, we rekindle the inner spirit, both theirs and ours, and we can produce an extraordinary dividend, the speed of trust. I thank you so much, my friends. It's wonderful to be with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve. Did you know that Andy Roddick was from Nebraska?
I didn't know. That's interesting. That will add the rest of this.
Another Omaha one, right?
Yeah.
Stephen, thank you very much for your remarks. We have an Omaha book for you, something light for your suitcase and travels. Thank you again for your remarks. Yeah. Appreciate you being here.
Thanks so much.
You've been listening to a program from the Greater Omaha Chamber of Commerce. We've heard the keynote address given at the Chamber of Commerce's 2008 annual meeting. The guest speaker was Stephen M. R. Covey, author of The Speed of Trust. This program was recorded by KIOS-FM on Tuesday, February 12, 2008, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Jane McCain, Greater Omaha Chamber of Commerce Special Events Coordinator, for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Complete Noon Forum listings are available on the Internet. Visit our website at kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Coate, thanking you for listening.